Doing that took building this big coalition. We had a big turnover in the last election, and Republican Representative Melissa Rooker told me she felt the mood and the collaboration was a lot different this year.
And the desire to find solutions working across ideological factions was the key difference.
So Celia, you know, what do you think we learned from this session on how the legislature kind of breaks down?
Well, I think that we saw the legislature is obviously more moderate than in recent years. And especially in the House, there are almost three rather clear factions. Any two of them can work together to pass a bill or block a bill. But at the same time, two factions are apparently not enough to override a veto. We saw that on the Medicaid expansion vote and the first tax bill that Brownback vetoed back in February. So that's what we saw now at the end of the session.
On the tax vote specifically, it took Democrats, moderate Republicans, and a handful of conservatives. In the House, they were led by House Speaker Ron Reichman, who chose to vote for the veto override, and a few conservatives then followed him and joined on. Here's Republican Dan Hawkins, one of those people who was swayed by the speaker.
When our speaker hit green right away, he was trying to send a message to this whole body that he's leading, and come on and let's get it done. And I couldn't let him do it alone.
Now that the session is done, we're waiting for the tax changes to take effect, but we're also waiting on a couple other bills to see how the governor will react, if he'll sign them or veto them. Specifically, I'm thinking of the new school funding system bill and the bill that would allow public health care facilities to continue banning guns. On the K-12 funding bill, Celia, have we heard much about, you know, what the governor might do or what lawmakers expect from the Kansas Supreme Court?
What I'm hearing is that Democrats in particular, they are expecting that this bill is passing the governor's desk, but they are thinking that the Kansas Supreme Court is going to reject it as inadequate. It does put in, it boosts school funding by about $280 million, but Senate Minority Leader Anthony Hensley told me today he expects that that's not enough and lawmakers will be back for a special session in July.
I would be really surprised if he vetoed the K-12 plan. They incorporated some things he and other conservatives wanted. The gun bill is kind of a lot more uncertain to me. Brownback did ask for an exemption from the concealed weapons law for the mental health facilities, but they then added in some other exemptions he didn't ask for. So if he does go ahead and veto that bill, I think on sine die, the ceremonial last day of the session, we'll probably see an effort to try to override that veto. We're also waiting to see what Governor Brownback himself chooses to do in the coming weeks. You know, I've heard all these rumors swirling for months that he's been in line for a job in the Trump administration, but he hasn't been saying much. Here he is actually talking about rumors that he was preparing to step down last month.
I don't know. Have you heard that term fake news?
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you heard about that? I don't know if you had or not.
What have you heard about him possibly leaving, and what could the impact be if Governor Brownback steps down?
What a lot of people are thinking right now is with the governor's kind of signature tax policies having just unraveled, that it would be a low point for him to leave. It seemed that throughout the session he wanted to maybe come to a compromise that would give him something, a flat tax, a two-bracket tax, something he could take away for losing his some of his signature policies. But that didn't seem to happen in the end. If he does leave now, what we don't know yet is how things might be different under Lieutenant Governor Jeff Collier. He is ideologically similar to Brownback, but he may handle things a little differently if he is planning to run for election in 2018.